Fourth and final hour of 3D on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. Boy, we've had a fast-moving show today, and I suspect this final hour will continue with that theme. Switch gears, talk a little hockey. Predators got a big win last night. UC Saros with his third shutout of the season as they defeated Vegas 1-0. Great atmosphere in the building last night. And to help us with all of that and more, Terry Crisp, the Crispinator, is on the line. Terry, how you doing?
Gentlemen, I am doing great. Thank you very much. And don't anybody tell me this is not hockey weather. It is. And I don't want to hear anybody say to me anymore, oh, well, you're used to it because you're Canadian, you're raised in it. No, I'm not. I'm not used to it, and it's still darn cold out there. So there you have it. Continue.
Going home from the arena, my car temperature gauge said 5 degrees outside.
Well, the other morning, I got to tell you guys, I told my wife, she went out to start the car. I said, I heard a sound I hadn't heard in a long time, and this was the sound I heard.
That was
now you know what that sound was, don't you?
Yeah, that was your car saying, do I really have to work today?
Exactly. Are you really expecting me to move?
Can you give me the day off? If I had a dollar for every time I heard you use head on a swivel, you know, I probably wouldn't have to drive Uber in my off time. I would have so much money.
You know what? I love it because I hear the little kids going by now and they're yelling, Crispy, head on a swivel, head on a swivel. I said, you've been listening, son. You're learning.
No doubt. And so that came into play last night, unfortunately, because Ryan Johansson was hit by Carrier late in the second period. He would not return to the game and, of course, has everybody wondering. Peter Laviolette was furious on the bench. A lot of the players were furious. What did you see out of that play? Of course, Johansson and Neal. Well, actually, that's where the play initiated. Johansson comes up with the puck in neutral ice, and then Carrier comes across and delivers the hit. What did you think?
You know what? First off, it should have been a penalty, and I'm not saying to what extent, but Carrier came all the way across, never broke stride, never had to put the brakes on. Johansson was in a vulnerable position coming off the board. So in my estimation, the very least that should have been called was a charging or a boarding penalty. I don't care which one you want to label it. There should have been at least a two-minute penalty on it. For the referees not to call it and all the BS they've been spouting in the league about head hits and hits into the boards, et cetera, and for the officiating staff last night, number one on the Johansson hit, number two on the icing late in the game that wasn't an icing, I wasn't a happy camper going home. I'll take the 2 points. I'll take the win. But the hit on Johansson to me was unnecessary, uncalled for. He had done nothing. And yet, not a call, not a two-minute or nothing. So I'll be interested to see if the league does even looks at it today.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a little confused on this because, you know, if we were talking about, you know, back in the day, certainly you've been around the game for a long time. You know, back in the day, that was an accepted practice, and Carrier would either have to pay the price in a different way or not. That's how the game was handled back then. But we're sitting here in a 2017-2018 season. And as you mentioned, this is exactly what the league is trying to get away from. This is all sports. We know head trauma, concussions, CTE, everything that's being discussed in sports today, this is what they're trying to get rid of. And I'm just perplexed on why no call last night. And I'll be curious to see how the league handles it moving forward, if they do anything.
I will, too. And I thought last night that there should have been immediate call. And you're right. I don't like the word retribution, but in the old days, Carrier would have had to answer to it to somebody along the line for it. And guys have long memories. But, again, for no call on that one, and we lose Johansson for the rest of the game, and we don't know what else will entail afterwards on it. But to me, there was no reason for not having a penalty called. And especially with the way they've been calling penalties earlier in the game.
No doubt. You are the perfect guy to ask this. You've been around startup franchises before in your career. Like I said, you've been around the game a long time.
I'm an original.
Yeah, that's right. You kind of know what startups are supposed to look like or what they've looked like in the past. And last night what we saw, Terry, is not what a startup has looked like in the league. Just to kind of give people a perspective, okay?
The biggest thing was that when Vegas came in, And let's be honest, let's put the nuts and bolts on the table. The gentleman who bought this team put $500 million on the table to join it. So right off the bat, he deserves something. And the owners knew that. He expected it when he did it. And the owners did. They opened up the draft and the unprotected list. Unbelievable. But when I came in with the Blues and then the Islanders, and then especially when I came with Tampa, and then now with what happened when we came in with the Predators, it was unbelievable. But having said all of that, I think that the compliments and the accolades should go to the scouts, the scouting staff, George McPhee, the GM, and the people who put that team together. They did their homework. Mind you, they had a lot of stuff to work with, a lot of good bodies and draft choices to work with, but they did a whale of a job. And when you look at that hockey club, and like Marsha's show, I mean, they took him, I forget, Willie knows it better than I do, that one. Carlson, what they got for him and gave up, and the deals that they manufactured and made throughout, they did a heck of a job. And I'll be honest, I never expected this start from the Vegas Knights, but they're there, and their goaltending is second to none in the league. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury's been through the wars, won a cup. Young Subban, PK's brother, playing unbelievable when he goes in the net. So, you know what? They've done it right. They did it right and did their homework. Not to say they're going to win a Stanley Cup, but they're sure having a good first year.
That was game 43 for them last night. So through 42 games, Vegas came into last night's game with 61 points. Do you know what the Predators had points-wise in the 98-99 season going into game 43? Care to guess?
21?
No, it's more. It's a little bit more than that, but it's obviously not 61. 34 points.
You know what? It was, but like I said, in this day, if you're going to have a man pay $500 million, you got to give him something to work with. And they did. They did their homework. And you know what? It's great for hockey. I don't care how you slice it. We went down to Vegas over that game. Willie was there and you guys. It was unbelievable. They're fans. They're building. They're hooping what they've done. And they are riding the wave. So, you know what? For our game, it's great.
Somebody else riding the wave is Juuse Saros. He's been lights out, another shutout, third shutout in his last five starts. Terry, in his last six starts, his save percentage, .970. You can win a lot of hockey games with that.
No kidding.
That's pretty good.
The little big man has come up out of nowhere, hasn't he? I mean, when David Poile and the staff put it together, and I heard you guys talking about earlier about who would have thought, you know, remember they're trying to decide who was going to be the backup, who we had, the different goaltenders, who goes to Milwaukee, who stays. And they stuck with Saros. They said, nope, we've seen him play over yonder. We got him. And he's the one that's going to be the heir apparent down the road for Pecorino. Well, it's sure as heck paying dividends now for whoever was stubborn and decided that's the way they're going. But the little guy, he's so nonplussed. After the game, I'm talking, we're walking out to our car and he's walking to his at the same time. And it's just like a walk in the park. You know, you said to him, you know what? You played a whale of a game tonight. Unbelievable. Congratulations. Just, oh, okay, yeah, thank you. Just like, okay, let's move on to the next thing. You didn't play or whatever. I said, this little guy's got ice in his veins out there. And you watch him. He doesn't, I think Chris Mason's one who said, he has no wasted motion. He's moving before the puck's moving. He's there waiting for it to come to him. He's got the reflexes of a cat. And the guys love playing for him. They love playing in front of him, and that's a big plus. And the other thing is that, and I said as a coach, you can't just have a backup goalie who's a nice guy. You can't have a backup goalie who's good in the dressing room. You got to have a backup goalie that when you put him in, the intent is to rest your number one goalie and win games at the same time. And right now, the little fella, Saros, is doing that for us, which is great.
Crispy, I thought it was interesting. We all did a double take. We just assumed, without thinking about it, that after a bye week you would go with Pecorine. But it made a lot of sense when you really started to delve into it and say, okay, this is a guy that has kept his game sharpness. It was in Milwaukee. And Pecorine, who they want to rest long-term, now has another day or two to go through some practices, ramp himself up to game readiness. I thought it was a really interesting out-of-the-box thinking. It's not something I may have thought of. I think I might have just done by the book and said, he's my number one. My number one goes in there.
And you know what, Willie, I totally concur with what you just said, but having been around Coach Laviolette and his staff, and they're not afraid to think outside the box. And that's the one thing I love about this coaching staff is they'll make moves, they'll do things, they'll shift around and do stuff that I hadn't seen other franchises go with the teams to have fun, to make them a team together. And they firmly believe in Saros, the coaching staff and the players. So to put them in wasn't a long stretch for them. But you're right, Willie. I agree with you. Coming back off the bye week, I call it, they had good time to do it. He played three games, played solid, 1-2, a close loss down there, and give Pekka a few more practices to get ready to come back in. So you know what? That was a great move by the staff.
Well, we know Philip Forsberg will not be back for another couple of weeks. He's progressing. He's skating on his own. Victor Arvidsson also skated before practice today. So that would lead you to believe there's less of a chance of him coming back tomorrow, even though at any point they could bring him back. He's eligible to come off the injured list. Ryan Johansson was able to at least participate in practice today, so that makes him at least a question mark for tomorrow. But, Crispy, let's look at it this way. Those are three of your top scorers. How much did we talk about those three players throughout last year? And if you're down a few of your guys, it really does put the heat on the rest of your roster to be able to make some big plays. So when you're coaching and you're down a couple of your top weapons like that, how did you try to motivate your other players? What did you try to say to them to bring out the best of them in situations like this?
You know what? There's not a whole lot as a coach. You're not a genius. There's no magical wand. There's no magical formula. You can take 3 minutes and tell a team. They know who's missing. They know exactly how big a hole they are. But what you do is you bring in three or four of the guys, and you have a one-on-one with those guys saying, you guys now are going to get the ice time. You guys now are going to step up. Your game is not where it should be. You guys have been producing in the long run. Now you're going to have to. Now there's no more excuses that you're not getting ice time, you're not getting them. And the chances that you're getting, your scoring chances, you've got to bury them. We don't have Forsberg. We don't have Arvi, Johansson, whoever. And I'd put the whip right to them. I'd lay the shillelagh on them and say, you know what? A medium effort or an average is not good enough anymore. We need you guys to step up your game big time and put the thing right to them. And last night I saw some of that be happening. Fiala getting his game back. Last night Sissons getting his game back. Those guys and Turris and Yarncroak and a couple other guys, they got to bring their game up. They got to bring it now to a margin where we always use that phrase, by committee. Well, they're part of the big committee that's got to step up and fill the holes.
Let's talk about tomorrow, Crispy. Arizona is fairly tricky because on paper you're sitting there going, well, they've won 11 games or 10 games, whatever it is, and you know you should roll out there at home and beat them. They have been better the last 10 games or so. They lost in overtime, for example, last night to San Jose. They outshot San Jose 32-22. They've got Nick Jalmerson back in there, for example. They've had a few additions. They made the trade. They brought in another veteran, Richard Panik, who we're very familiar with the Blackhawks. So, again, during this point of the season, Crispy, you've coached good teams where maybe you're a favorite on paper. How did you make sure your team stayed sharp when you played an opponent that may not get your attention right off the bat?
Well, the first thing is we shouldn't have to do anything because you were there, Willie. I wasn't the last game in Arizona in Phoenix when we got our buns kicked by them. And I don't care if you lose by 10 goals, one goal or whatever, the bottom place team in the league kicked your buns. So you shouldn't need a whole lot of impetus and a whole lot of rah-rah speeches to know that they're a good team. And every team has pride. I don't care who you are, if you're the top team or the bottom team, your team has pride. And when you go on the ice and come back, have to face your fans or your coaches or whoever, you don't want to always be the bottom feeder. And right now, Arizona feels they can win games, and they're playing that way. So there's not a whole lot that I think needs to be said to our hockey team for two reasons. First, this team beat us the last time. And secondly, I think that was a big game last night. That was a big, solid game. Two of the better teams in the league going head-to-head. That should give our guys a little bit of a leg up saying, hey, this is the way we have to play every night. Not just against Vegas or not just against the big boys, but also against the teams that want to come in and knock us off. And that better be our mindset.
All right, Darren and I both have a question. We heard this expression you just put out there. We want to know more about it. When you lay the shillelagh to somebody, how do you do that? What are you saying? If you wanted to lay the shillelagh to Darren today and get him motivated for tomorrow's game, how would you do that? What does that entail?
He'd probably be the sorriest guy tomorrow morning there ever was. Being Irish, he knows exactly what I mean, son. And it's like, I'll meet you in the woodshed, and don't be late getting to the woodshed, boy. And I'm not going to spare your feelings with what I'm saying to you, how I'm going to say it to you. And when you leave the woodshed, you know exactly what my message was to you.
Even with that being said, I know Brett Hull told Joe Buck you were a mean son of a gun. I don't think you're a mean son of a gun.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Don't you try and tell anybody anything else.
Okay.
I am.
You don't want me to ruin your image?
Don't ruin my image. I spent a lot of years building that image up. You know what? Brett Hull and I are the best of friends. I laugh when he's telling Joe Buck. He says, oh, no, he's a great person, but he was with a terrible, terrible coach. He was just crazy. Well, you know what? When I look back over my career, you know what? There are certain things that might have changed. Maybe not. What the heck?
Brett was like, Coach Crespi was just, what are you doing? What are you act like you're a professional. Going on and on. It was great. It was actually a really good interview if people haven't seen it with Joe Buck. But he, in all seriousness, he came back and said, no, Terry's a great guy. He just was, he rode my butt as a coach.
Well, you know what? I rode his butt for a reason. I tell people this. When I was coaching, I said, if you hear from me, and if I'm on your butt, and if I'm on your back, and if I'm giving it to you, I care. And I know you're good, and I know you're capable of bringing it out, and it's my job to bring it out. It's when you no longer hear from me is when you start to worry. Like when silence reigns supreme, and I'm not on you, then you start to worry, because that means I really don't care anymore, and you're on your way out. So, and Theo Fleury, when I said that to him, later on I said to somebody, boy, and I got to tell you one thing, Kristen must have really loved me.
Terry, always a pleasure. We'll see you tomorrow night.
All right, guys. See y'all at the Bridgestone. Bring the passion, gentlemen.
And he always does it. Terry Crisp, he brings the passion. He is just one of those guys. I said this when the Titans decided to put Dave McGinnis in the booth. I said, Dave McGinnis and Terry Crisp, right? Those are two guys you want to go to dinner with because they will just tell
They're
you
make
story
you
after story, make you laugh, been around the game their whole lives. They've been there, done it, seen it all, and they can tell you about it. They have a great – right? Everybody doesn't have a great delivery. Not everybody knows how to tell a story. Terry Crisp knows how to tell a story.
Right. Without repeating the same stories, unless you ask for them. It's amazing how
he always has new material.
Fresh stories from him. He has done it all.
Good stuff. All right, we'll come back. More of 3D next on 102.5 The Game. Well, it's interesting. There's been a lot of news out of Pittsburgh today. Todd Haley out as their OC. Mike Munchak turning down a second interview with Arizona to be their head coach. And it looks like the latest report from Chris Mortensen is that Randy Fitchner, their quarterback's coach, is the one who's going to get promoted to OC, not Munchak.
So Mike Mularkey will have to find a new landing spot.
Well, I don't think it was Mike Mularkey was ever in the plans, but
it's funny how you think former offensive coordinator, Pittsburgh Steelers, offensive coordinator job is open. And then you look back and you realize it was 2001 to 2003 he was the offensive coordinator, which got him the job as a head coach for the Buffalo Bills. That was his first head coaching job. The job he did for the Steelers promoted him up to that.
So this will be Big Ben's fourth offensive coordinator since he's been the Steelers quarterback. Can you name the other three?
Wait, repeat that?
This will be whoever it is, Randy Fitchner, whoever it becomes. These are the reports. If it ends up being him, this will be his fourth OC since he's been in Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger. Can you name the other three?
Okay, Todd Haley.
Yep.
Ken Whisenhunt.
Yep.
And who would it have been when Whisenhunt left to become the coach of the Cardinals? And they won the Super Bowl, and they beat Whisenhunt and the Cardinals.
You're all over it. You're Cardinals.
Think
Arizona.
Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians.
Yeah.
Who do you think he had the most success with?
The most success? Well, that's interesting. He won the Super Bowl with Bruce Arians.
Okay, record-wise. Just record-wise. Who did he have the most success with?
The records have been pretty good lately. Let's say Todd Haley.
Last. Not Todd Haley. He was the worst.
Really?
Todd Haley was the worst.
Well, let's go with Bruce Arians.
He would be second.
So they had the best record with Ken Wisenhunt. How many seasons are we talking?
He was 5-1 with the Wisenhunt as his OC in the playoffs.
Oh, in the playoffs?
Yeah, playoffs.
In the playoffs. Yeah. I thought you were talking about overall regular season.
No. We're talking about playoffs. This is all about playoffs.
I got mixed up.
Okay. Playoffs. Record. Wisenhunt the best. Who did they score the most points per game?
In the playoffs.
I
mean, that's a small sample size. That doesn't tell me much.
Actually, they both, Haley, 7 playoff games. Bruce Arians, 8 playoff games. Wisenhunt, 6 playoff games.
I got no idea.
You know the three candidates.
Right. I'm just picking at random. Okay. I'll say Haley.
Haley was, yet again, the worst. Lowest points per game, worst record. Ken Wisenhunt had the best record. Bruce Arians, most points per game.
It's an interesting coaching tree for Pittsburgh. They haven't turned over the head coach often. They've had, I have to believe, they've got the fewest head coaches in the last 50 years.
Oh,
right?
By far. I would say so, yes.
And they have produced a lot of other head coaches off of their family tree. Lots of them.
I don't think there's any other franchises that had 3 head coaches, right?
And would you say, and I don't know that everybody's done really well, but they've had more coaches spin off and do well than Bill Belichick has, right? The Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher coaching tree.
I would say
has
yes.
Has spun off some people that have had decent amounts of success.
Mm-hmm. I would like to propose something to you as we've talked about this coaching search. And by the way, it looks like Arizona is starting to hone in on Patriots linebackers coach Brian Flores, who we've been talking about, as their next head coach. So it looks like Belichick is going to lose half his staff this offseason when they're done. John Robinson. Maybe taking the wrong approach to building this franchise. Let me tell you why. He's been using free agency and the draft to build one side of the ball much more than the other side. Fair? He has built the offense. He has been building up the offense way more than building up the defense.
And I would say it started before he got there, but he's continued it.
Well, he certainly hasn't shied away from it.
Right.
His Conklin, Corey Davis.
Right, and there was a Dory Jackson was in there, but
Taywan Taylor, Jonnu Smith. Some of the things on offensive line. I mean, he is Derrick Henry.
When a lot of people thought that would be a defensive player.
He has really put a lot of time and effort and money into the offense. Okay, I understand. You're trying to build and help out your franchise quarterback. But may I suggest that maybe that's not the way to build up your franchise? Maybe it's important to have a good quarterback, but let's be honest. No matter what Mariota gets elevated to, whatever his ceiling is never going to be Tom Brady. His ceiling is never going to be Peyton Manning. His ceiling is never going to be Drew Brees. When you have those guys are special, right? They're different than everybody. Aaron Rodgers, he's never going to be Aaron Rodgers. You can build things differently with those guys because they're once in a generation. You don't go into it expecting.
Best of the best.
Yeah, they're the best of the best. They're not going to have that in Mariota, and that's okay. Doesn't mean you can't win if they're not that. But how's Jacksonville got to this point? How have they built their team?
They have had high first-round picks, and they've used most of those on defensive players, although Bortles was a high first-round pick.
They have addressed the defense more than they have the offense. Sure. Did they use a high pick on Bortles? Yes. Did they use a high pick on Leonard Fournette? Yes. But look what they've done. Look what they've done. Well, they have. Jalen Ramsey was, what, third pick? But look how much attention they've given the defense. Philadelphia this year. Jim Schwartz, you'd say their defense, pretty darn good, right?
Yes.
How's Minnesota built? Are they built on their quarterbacks?
Teddy Bridgewater was a first-round pick. They traded a first-round pick to get Sam Bradford, so I would say they have invested a lot in the quarterback position.
But where have they invested the most?
I'd have to look at their picks. I don't know. I would have to say defense is a big part of it.
They're built on their defense.
But think about it. We say that, and the defense is great, but Dalvin Cook was a that was the guy everyone was talking about before the season started. He was a first-round pick, right?
Was he, or was he a second-round pick?
Let's look at that. That's a good question.
I thought Dalvin Cook was slid down the board.
All the way to the second round?
I think so.
So who was their
or
first-round
maybe
pick?
He was a late first-round
who
pick.
Who was their first-round pick then?
He was let's see.
Maybe he was their second-round pick.
Cook was the second-round pick.
Because they traded the first-round pick to get Bradford, I guess, right? Is that right?
Maybe they didn't. Yeah, they don't think they had a
pick. Maybe they didn't have a first-round pick.
Yeah, he was a second-round pick.
So their first pick was an offensive player. I think it's – every team is different. I don't know if I would make the assumption that they've invested a lot more in the defense. They've had a pretty good defense for a while.
Right, but that means they've been addressing the defense.
Right, but it's not like the Titans are ignoring their defense. I think now they're in a position where it's time to get the most out of the offensive players that you already have, and you're adding complementary pieces. They're going to have to work on the pieces at the receiver position. Now, though, I think they can attack the issues on defense. They need a playmaker on defense. They need another one.
I really wouldn't say they've been addressing the defense.
They haven't been to this point, but I'm saying now they can. Because the offense, the foundation is in place, for better or worse. They've got to get more out of those guys.
To me, it comes off very silly to keep throwing things at the offense. At some point, these teams that are left, and by the way, New England traditionally always has, they never get the credit. We never consider them, right? We always talk about the Seahawks or the Broncos or the Vikings or the Jaguars. It's always somebody else. But every year, you know who's always consistent every year near the top, has a good defense every year? New England. They're not horrible on defense every year. They're always this year they started off shaky, and look how they, after the first month of the season, what they did the rest of the way.
Well, this defense for them is very interesting because they're not loaded with star guys. They collectively have done well. I off the top of your head, you don't read off their names and say, wow, that's a big-time guy.
But they always do they trade for Tlaib. They trade for Revis. They always do that stuff. James Harrison.
Yeah.
And what happens? James Harrison comes in, first game, what's he get? Two sacks.
Akeem Ayers. You know, they find the complimentary guys that fit. They know what they're looking for. But it's not like they go out and spend millions and millions of dollars on the defense.
Akeem Ayers, we laugh, but Akeem Ayers tackled Marshawn Lynch at the one.
Sure,
that was the play before the interception.
There's a long list of guys like that. Adam Butler, undrafted guy from Vanderbilt. He had a sack
made a
in
difference.
The game. Yeah. What's the other kid?
Malcolm Butler. Nobody had even heard of him.
Another guy who's not a high pick.
Nobody even heard of him.
Sure. But that's unique. That's the Patriots. Nobody's been able to really replicate that. Although I will say this for John Robinson, some of his mid to lower round picks have been useful guys. Don't you think Jayon Brown has got a chance to be pretty good? He had a lot of responsibility for a rookie. If he can keep getting better, Kevin Byard's a nice pick.
And if you look at his first draft, two of those three second rounders were the defensive side of the ball. Now Dodd's a bust, but
right.
Austin Johnson's all right.
Austin Johnson is starting to at least be useful. Mm. He played a lot.
Second-round pick. He needs to be. Second-round pick.
But he made big strides.
He ought to be good. Second-round pick. High.
How can you complain about what they got out of that defense this year? Did a good job. Got to keep getting better.
But do you know they're missing? They're missing elite guy. They're missing the Calais Campbell, that kind of. Jalen Ramsey is a difference maker for the Jags. Lattimore has come in New Orleans and changed their whole defense. Those guys that change the defense.
Yes.
I don't know.
They don't have that guy.
Their first-round pick this year, is he going to do that? I don't know. I like him. I think special teams, he's got a ways to go. I think he lost his confidence this year. But is he a guy that's going to change their defense? I don't know.
Who?
Well, they drafted 25th pick. They drafted Corey Davis.
Yeah.
And Adoree Jackson.
Yeah. Adoree Jackson.
Is Adoree Jackson going to change their defense?
No, I don't think he's a game changer, but he's a
good
player.
Pick. He needs to be.
He's a late first-round pick, but he's a good player. Who I think is going to get better. But they need that dynamic game changer. Those guys aren't easy to find, but I do think you can focus on that now more.
I don't think you can say late first-round pick, oh, game changer. I mean, there's teams that traditionally draft late first-round all the time. You still got to make the best. I mean, it's first-round picks that can change franchises. Right.
There's plenty of busts in the first
New
round
England
that aren't.
Drafts at the bottom of the draft
but
every
he was,
year.
He was in as a starter from day one and held up and had a good year. I'd put that as a pretty successful first year.
Like I said,
for the 25th
I like
pick.
His, but I'm asking you, is he going to be a game changer?
Okay, how many guys in the first round are game changers instantly, first year? Not that many.
Lattimore, Ramsey, those guys?
Yeah, those are rare. It doesn't happen very often. Those are home runs. I think Adoree Jackson was a double. If you're taking a swing with him, I thought he was a double. Not a whiff, right? That's good. You need pieces like that. Need more. Especially replenishing your outside rushers. I think that's a huge priority. Got a lot of mileage out of the kid the guy they brought in from the Colts. I'm now
Walden.
Eric Walden. They got mileage out of him, but he's a good find, but Kevin Dodd doesn't look like he's going to get there. Morgan Arakpo getting older.
Williams,
to me, that's a big.
They drafted or they brought in
I'm
from
talking
Denver.
About edge rushers. Edge rushers.
I'm saying, though, they need – the point is those guys were – those examples were good. They were nice pieces. But think about Jacksonville. They went out and they brought in Malik Jackson. They went out and brought in Calais Campbell. Those guys changed. Those were not just nice bodies that were pretty good. Those guys changed and elevated them even more.
I think
a good defense that elevated them even more.
But I think that John Robinson did a good job of matching up. I think Sylvester Williams.
Marcell Dareus.
Okay, but Sylvester Williams, Jonathan Cyprian, and Logan Ryan were nice pickups. Those were pretty good pickups that upgraded the defense, which was really shoestringing it together. Before those guys got there, I thought collectively those guys made the defense better, along with a couple of draft picks. It's happening. They're moving in the right direction. You can only have one draft a year, and you can only have one set of free agents a year. I think John Robinson, I have confidence that he is addressing the defense that needs a talent upgrade.
A very good football mind that we both know, a mutual friend, just texted me and said, Adoree Jackson is Andre Dyson. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think he's better than Andre Dyson, potentially.
So you disagree
and
with
Andre Dyson
our
was
mutual
pretty good.
Friend who is a very good football mind?
Yes.
You disagree with him?
A little bit.
Okay. I'm just
Andre Dyson was not a kick returner.
Well, right now, Adoree Jackson's got to get better at that.
But he's got the job. He's
I understand.
He's a rookie.
But I was expecting more.
I was too, especially what we saw in the preseason. But I think you can develop players. You have to develop players.
We'll come back and wrap up a really good Wednesday edition of 3D. We'll do that next.
No sleep till.
This is my favorite one. Statement from head coach Mike Tomlin. The Pittsburgh Steelers on Todd Haley. Honk if you've heard this before. I have made the decision to not renew the contract for offensive coordinator Todd Haley. I would like to thank Todd for his contributions to our offense in the past 6 years. We wish him the best in his coaching future. What's the point of that? We wish him the best in his future endeavors. You know what? If that's all you've got to say, then just don't say anything. If that's the best you've got, six seasons, then just don't make a statement, because there's nothing genuine about that. Who cares whether you wish him the best in his future endeavors? Who gives a damn? If that's all you have to say, then just don't say anything.
I think you have to be professional about it. So I don't have a problem with it.
Well, it means nothing. If that means being professional, saying absolutely nothing, then okay.
I think it's
congratulations,
better.
Mike Tomlin.
I think it's better to do that than not do anything.
Really? So that there's no meaning, no feeling, no nothing behind that other than we want to thank him and wish him the best. That means something?
It's better than doing nothing.
I don't think so.
I think you get ripped for being unprofessional if you don't do anything.
Unprofessional is not doing anything?
No, it's professional. What they did was professional. You release a statement. He's not with us. You're not trashing the guy. And you're thanking him for his work.
Okay,
if you didn't do it, you get destroyed for not saying anything.
No, you're not. You already told us that. You didn't renew his contract.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did. No. They didn't renew his contract.
No, that was reported by the media. That wasn't released by the team. The team has to release that. And so that's their release. That's it. If they didn't make a release, they'd get ripped. You should understand that. You've been in this business for a long time. There's a difference between the media reporting something
and
the
team releasing it. You know what offends me? Those statements. That's what offends me.
So what are they supposed to do? Write a novel about the great career of
you
Todd
Haley? You got
nothing
else to say?
They're parting ways.
Hey, he did some really good stuff. We really appreciate it. We had a lot of playoff game, won division title. Offense got better, protected. You have nothing to say?
It's not going to be flowery.
Nothing.
You saw what happened. There was an incident where he embarrassed the team at the end. They're not going to do some huge flowery deal when they part ways. It's not going to be Mr. Lovefest.
Well, it's hard with Todd Haley, I will admit.
Yes. So they did a professional job. They kept it short, to the point. See you later.
He did kind of have an incident off the field.
He had a big incident.
And he's had incidents on the sidelines.
He's a hothead.
Oh, there's no question. I heard stories.
He knows offense.
Yeah, he does. He's not a head coach. He's not wired to be a head coach.
No, I don't think so either.
Somebody will pick him up.
Well, that'll be something to watch for, especially because people know him. He's been around a long time.
Yeah.
And he's been the same way everywhere.
You're right about that. He hasn't changed, I don't think. It kind of it all ends the same, does it not? I don't know if you saw this, Willie. I don't know if you want to hear this, but it is out there. Did you see where Miles Jones decommitted from Vanderbilt? I was out there last night.
Miles Jones is
a big recruit. They got early signing. He informed him he's decommitting, and it looks like
he signed and he's decommitting. You can't decommit
or,
if you sign.
Verb, I guess. I guess he's been on board for a long time. I guess like,
is he local?
10 months, no. And I guess no, he's from Florida, Heritage. Hmm. And he was that was a big one for Derek Mason and his coaching staff. And what did you say you saw? I didn't see this, Chase, but you told me that last night that you saw where he was going to Nebraska.
Yeah, I saw a report on Twitter that he was flipping to Nebraska. Don't know if that's been confirmed or not.
Who's their head coach?
Believe it is Scott Frost.
Scott Frost, who came from
the national champion Central Florida.
Yes. Golden Knights from down in Florida. Well, I hate to hear that. Notre Dame does, but that's, it's not good. That was a big coup for Derek Mason. And he's been on board for a while. Like I said, I think it's been 8-10 months he's been on board. Also, Notre Dame's Brian Kelly dismisses four players from the team, including one of their big wide receivers. Arizona State quarterback Brady White has told Mike Norvell that he is going to transfer to Memphis. I was told Quentin Dormady was trying to go to Memphis, transfer there, and he was turned down. Now we know why.
Where's he going? Is it unknown at this point?
Who?
Quentin Dormady.
Oh, that's right. You weren't up there yesterday. That was my This Is What I Know.
You're right. You said he was be going, oh, Colorado State.
That's okay. What I'm being told.
Okay.
I was told that's where he's going.
And so now Garantano is the man?
That's not out there. That's just what I'm being told.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got Garantano. They have three quarterbacks right now on their roster. But, yeah, I was told that Dormady was trying to go to Memphis and was turned down. And then after seeing yesterday's news that Arizona State quarterback Brady White is transferring to Memphis, now I see why. So we shall see. Be a lot of fun. Tomorrow we'll be over at Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Coyotes. Don't forget, tonight, Smashville Live, Tin Roof on Broadway. Tonight's players, Kyle Turris, Cody McLeod. Should be a lot of fun this evening. If you're in the area, get over there and get a chance to see that show. Braden Gall, Hal Gill will be a part of it as well.
You'll have fun if you go down there, I can promise you.
No doubt.
And a lot of you may not have had a chance to meet Kyle Turris yet. This is a great opportunity to do that.
Really good guy. You'll really enjoy being around him. Cody McLeod, same thing. That's going to do it for us. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll talk to you then. Jared and the GM, that's next.
Time. One last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.